And it's a small group, and we'll see how much you guys really want to go through today.
The glare is not going to fix in the new year.
I'm sorry?
The glare. Oh,
the glare is not. You know, we could lower the.
Lower the shade. It's like the light. It's like, it doesn't matter what. It's like how it's set up.
It's just a shiny screen.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's fine.
Good.
Let me do the. That might also help. It might be another.
Nothing. Like, it's
really,
amazing.
It makes it almost
work. It's the projector.
Yeah.
Like, oh, now I really see it.
Yeah.
You see the glare more, but maybe there's no contrast in the other part.
Right.
all right. Well,
now the next person who walks in is going to think it's like a surprise party.
Yeah.
Like, we all just yell, "Surprise!"
So just a few things before we get started. Right. You know, big news again. Sadly, Bryson's leaving.
Yeah. How long has it been? I lose track of time. It's like longer than a year.
We lose track of time, too.
So Richard's 5-year came and went unremarked by anyone, but we just realized it was like in November, so he's been here 5 years.
Hold on.
Yeah.
So best memo, most interesting topic.
Yeah.
So for me, I think the consent stuff is just the best, which we kind of got into a little bit in property offenses, but there's a lot of interesting scholarship on consent, and it's all new. It's like in the last 10 years, there's this really great stuff that's coming out. So
have you started to tackle? I started reading parent stuff, the sort of like kids consent.
Yeah,
and then
exactly.
I thought of vaccination shot, but what was the example in here? It was ear piercing.
Ear piercing.
There's tons of stuff.
Sports, kids' sports. You know, just like there's.
Yeah, and elderly people as well. Like anyone who's kind of has someone in, you know, in their care. So there's
surprise.
I'm so sorry.
Bryson's giving us top hits before he goes.
Yeah.
Consent so far.
Okay.
Bryson's got days on Friday.
Yeah.
Do we have any? Am I like close?
I sent an email, but it was you know,
it was right before the holidays.
It was you were probably swamped. So.
Oh my goodness! I'm sorry to hear that.
Well, I'm gonna miss you guys, but I told Rachel that I'm gonna be adamantly checking the meeting minutes.
You can come back.
Yeah, you can come.
We can send you the
text.
State Department liaison.
Yeah, exactly. I'm a huge minutes checking fan. So, but yeah, it's gonna be different. That'll be interesting. I'm definitely gonna keep in touch and be monitoring and reading and enjoying all the new stuff that comes out. Especially all the new year, all the interesting offenses.
And where are you?
I'm going to the State Department.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's a big change, but I think it's going to be fun. So.
Are you posted here?
Yes. I'll be in D.C.
Okay.
So I'm not going to do any traveling at all, at least for a while.
And can you talk about the nature of the work?
Yeah. So
or would you have to kill us?
Yeah, exactly.
No, so I'm going to be doing like rule of law work. So doing like more kind of an analyst type role, writing reports and kind of helping look at other countries' laws and improvements and whether they comport with certain obligations and that sort of thing. So it should be interesting. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
So we will miss Bryson for many reasons. You may not know, he's kind of more of our kind of there are various things, but you know, if you want to know something in Latin, you go to Bryson.
History.
We will miss his
downstairs.
So again, his last day is Friday. In the email before I sent out his personal email too, if for any reason down the future you want to get hold of him. That's the best way. Other things.
I just wanted to, if you missed the email about that, you might have missed the email asking for...
Right, this is what I was going to say next. So part of that is we're also then looking for, a vacancy, the announcement. And I put the link in the email. I can re-forward it to... we've already got a bunch of applications.
That's who's going to show up at your talk.
I'm sorry?
That's who's coming to the talk.
Who knows?
He's like, are you going next Thursday? And I was like, yeah.
Maybe. I will say, we've gotten a lot of
applicants. I didn't come, but I'm going to be in Florida.
we have a lot of applicants so far from more of a national pool. We posted on Indeed.com, which apparently is, you can do for free, and it's a big national. Anyway, so it's a different set. Also, the timing of this, normally we've done it kind of, we're not getting the out-of-clerkship, out of law school, we're off-cycle for that. So we're getting a lot more folks with,
I'd say
3 to 10 years experience, and practice experience in different forms. So, any thoughts you have, any former clerks, any former two steps removed somebody, please do let them know, because, it's a lot of research and writing. And it's an unusual sort of thing, so it's not for everybody. What else to say? We're working, and Janu's on leave for another good month or so, but he'll be back, so he's not with us today. Although our numbers are low for a while, we're kind of proceeding on murder, homicide, child abuse, abuse of vulnerable adults, sex abuse. We're starting to kind of look at, and kidnapping. So we're again this kind of like moving forward with offenses against persons. If any of you have any kind of thoughts or input, again, definitely welcome them in this kind of on the front end, and appreciate to hear from that. The set of materials we got out there right before the holidays for assault, threats, and robbery, got a couple months still on that. March 2nd was the deadline.
Can
I ask a question? It's kind of maybe current law. I'm showing off. I started.
That you did the reading.
But because it was slow, and I thought if I don't start, then it will get busy. And then today I realized all the stuff I really should have been doing yesterday. But whatever. So it was deception. Is that the one where you like promise something to get? If you say, is it? This had to do with effective consent. If I say, I promise I'll marry you if you have sex with me.
Right.
I'm not going to marry you.
Yeah.
Is that some kind of sexual assault?
Yeah. Well, so that's getting ahead of us
a bit. I know. But I'm just curious. Could you charge that now?
I will say that...
what if it's like, seriously, don't be so old-fashioned?
So sex
Does
abuse...
Does that count as a defense?
That, for the record, is Laura.
The speaker.
Not to be confused with
what's
other
the
voices.
Answer there?
Yeah, the answer, I don't believe there's, anybody correct me here, that we cover that in current district law, sex abuse by fraud it certainly is not explicitly addressed, and what you'd have to do is unpack the definition of consent, which there's been no court opinion interpreting it in that context in terms of like is deceptive, is a fraudulent. I will say this though, again, for years now the ALI, the American Law Institute, has had this model penal code update project focused on sex abuse, and this is something they are they're looking at, and they have initially done some drafts of, is this kind of a very specialized offense? It's essentially, you know, kind of a rape by fraud type offense, right? Or, you know, some sort of sexual abuse is, you know, we characterize it. Whether that moves forward or not, I don't know. It got a lot of pushback when they did some drafts. I think there are some examples in some jurisdictions where this is a thing. Anyway, so we have not fully engaged with that, but right, it you know, to what extent our current definition of consent, and which in sex abuse talks about, I think it's freely given. Is that
freely given.
You know, you know, right? You know, certainly in you know, that has not been interpreted. There isn't anything in legislative history, and yet it opens up all these questions, right? If it was based on a false statement, if there was some economic benefit, right, in the background,
then it would be the fraud side of it, not the sex side of it, right?
Wait, who's benefiting economically?
Who said, I'll pay you to have sex with me, but then you don't pay the person?
Well, I mean, there you have prostitution solicitation, and that, and there is case law there.
I'll give you a diamond ring if you have sex with me.
Right. Well, and
then it's not a...
Yeah, and you know, right, again, we have prostitution solicitation case law has addressed this in a lot of ways. You know, there's the one case where it's, you know, I'll share a joint, right, you know, and come back to my place. And again...
What?
Yeah.
That's a case?
Yeah. You know,
so
again,
what was your example?
smoking a joint. I believe it was, you know, sharing it, and like, you know,
was the payoff for the sex?
Yeah, and
that was upheld.
I believe so.
I am so confused.
We're looking forward to being very speculative.
For a joint in
apparently
exchange for
so.
Yeah.
And then got arrested both sides.
Well, you know, there's this notion, and I hate to use the words, but you know, the whole notion of crack whores,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
people
exchanging drugs,
you know.
Well, but it's you know, it's a small step from, you know, or how do you distinguish sharing a joint from providing drugs in exchange for sex, right? Which is, I think, where, right, the kind of the conduct that's targeted. So
also,
anyway,
it gets really messy with extortion too. In today's context.
And right, if there's any elements of
and
force also in there, I mean, sex abuse is...
So you're starting to tackle it.
We are starting to tackle it. We are looking at these ALI recommendations. I will say, you know, the ALI, you know, again, you know, at times it seems like we're working slowly. I know, but, you know, the ALI has been going at this for... almost 4 or 5 years for just this, and they are not, they're not going to issue their recommendations in the next year or two, right? Like, they've got some pieces that they seem to be fairly far along, but this just raises a lot of fundamental questions. And as Bryson was saying, consent more generally, it's become much more prominent in litigation, in scholarship, and it's really still under theorized, and we, even in the district, kind of, you know, don't have much case law on it at all. There's a general consent, you know, instruction there, which is based off of a couple of cases, and, you know, that's really it. And it's how broadly it applies to all offenses against persons, not just misdemeanor sex abuse, where that kind of was kidnapping, I think there was one. Anyway, yeah. So right. Anything else before we?
So when you send out that memo, you'll have an answer to my question.
Right,
definitive.
Right. I mean, I think I'd just say, like, it is
by Meatloaf.
Wait, did anybody hear that NPR story
for
or whatever
the end of time?
About the congressional hearing where they were all quoting Meatloaf?
No.
Okay.
Wait,
you big Meatloaf fan?
No, and also someone else on the committee was not.
Yeah.
Not
happening.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's then just move forward where we are now in property offenses. about that. Cool. There we go. And again, Renaud, just so you know, Paul was trying to call in. We don't have a phone here because of the conference center's partly not working today.
Oh,
so, he's in West Africa too. So he was like, going to make valiant efforts, and then we even failed on our part because of the.
So it's our fault this time.
but yes, he's and he's even like traveling between two countries.
Wow.
So it was like on top. Anyway,
that was really
he was
quite
yes,
ambitious.
He was.
At the end, I've got it. 2 minute clip. It's very funny.
Excellent. All right.
Meatloaf?
Something to look forward to. Yes.
Something to look forward to. So great. Let's because wanted to kind of prioritize starting off with trespass and.
So are we doing
burglary type offenses? So this would be number 11. Is where I want to go first,
okay.
Just because again, this is something that Bryson had worked on, so we wanted to like have a chance to kind of discuss this while he's with us.
So we are starting with 8.
Terrible. So
you just confused me.
See this 8
up. 8's up there.
Sorry, yeah.
So I'm confused.
We'll scroll down to find 11. Yep.
Oh, 11's on the same thing, Anna. Oh, I get it.
I got you.
Yeah,
okay.
This is just broken up.
Again,
so a number of comments. I think there were... So this is the OAG one on report number 11. And is there anything here that... You know, again, there was some things that we wanted to raise or, you know, kind of follow up on, but we're also happy to, like...
Oh, this was the act alone or in concert with others.
There were a couple.
Yeah, at least. that was...
Right, so criminal obstruction of a public way. Mm-hmm. That was where it kind of started here, right? And I think... So, Bryson, correct me, but I think one thing, maybe just to kind of note, was... You know, so one aspect of the... One comment OAG had on criminal obstruction of a public way was... clarify that it's with using language like alone or in concert with others to show that it can be alone because that was unclear in the past in legislative history on this. There was some back and forth on that.
Oh, yeah.
We definitely, agree that we want it to cover single individuals, right? And I think that was your concern. Is like how do we
historically, what happened was the original act did not have it. Then the Court of Appeals read it into it, and then when the council redid it after that CCE committee, then they added the language to say no, we meant it.
I think you know at least in principle, yes, we wanted to be clear that it's a person acting alone, whether. You know, I don't know what all of you think about, like, you know, does that mean bringing alone the alone or in concert with others? There were some concerns about, as we were discussing this, about...
Conspiracy liability,
conspiracy.
Things like that. Like, how do elements interact with, general part type offenses?
Yeah.
If it's an element, it's kind of weird.
Yeah, so we want to make sure there's no, like... Given our other new stuff, unintended effects of adding in this in concert with others language... But
I'm more
however
actually,
it gets addressed,
I'm more actually
want to be
was
clear.
The alone part. The in concert with others was just...
Gotcha. Okay, so yeah, great. To emphasize this, that like it is one person, and that was definitely our intent, and
yeah.
We will see if we can strengthen that in some way. Another one was on... it's this middle paragraph here now on the screen about crowding, obstructing.
This was the OAG raised the point that the new statute didn't include inconveniencing as part of the definition of obstruct, and that this sense of inconveniencing was a piece of perhaps the meaning of incommode. In the statute that exists right now, and suggested that the statute include obstruct or inconvenience. And I mean, I don't know if we have a hugely solid position one way or the other on this.
I kind of,
yeah, exactly. Like, I mean, it seems a little bit broad, but it seems a bit broad to include any kind of inconvenience. It maybe is too narrow to only have obstructing with unreasonable hazard or something like that.
And that was my example, right? You have two people laying down, blocking a lane of the highway, and the cops are like telling people to go around, and there's no unreasonable hazard because of the cops.
But there is,
and therefore
but for
it's
the
not
cops,
a crime.
It seems like you can address that a different way. The whole thing is so you know, disparately applied, and there's inconvenience is definitely way too broad and way too vague, and who gets considered inconvenient? Absolutely not.
No. Except that the city council passed this. I mean, we're moving. I mean, there's no question where the statute is now. So the question is, are we changing it, or are we interpreting it, or why?
Right.
So that's
we're reforming. There's lots of reform.
Well,
Laura,
would you agree with this particular example that Dave gave, right? Because, which is to say, right, you know, you have police presence directing the person around, and so Dave would say, in that situation, right, there isn't an unreasonable hazard, but there should still be liability because, but for the police, there, you know, this would. Now,
right.
Now you're.
So you deal with it. It's. I mean, when do you like say the presence of police is what takes care of it? That's like that seems
right.
That
so
seems
so you'd agree there should be liability in that situation, but that the way.
It wouldn't
you would say
to me
you
that
don't.
There wouldn't be liability in that situation.
Right. Okay, I just wanted to make sure we're on the same page with that example at least, and I think like we would agree too that yes, there's. This example shouldn't be different. If there was liability without the police, the police there and redirecting people around should not affect liability. So at least we need to figure out some way to deal with this particular hypo that you brought up, which
I think is
one thing.
To me, the part of the problem is the without unreasonable hazard as opposed to merely render impassable.
Yeah.
Right. Because I thought the purpose of the statute was to address the impassable, not that you have a readily available workaround. And if I go on K Street and I lay down, not K, Georgetown, just the
and line up for cupcakes.
And line up for cupcakes is fine. I don't have a problem. But the example I was going to give is lay down across the sidewalk. It would just have to be Georgetown. It could be any place where there's a sidewalk. Then you are rendering it impassable as a single person, and but yet, you know, is it unreasonable? How many cars are coming down the street, right? So,
a crime? What's the issue? Get up and move.
So there is.
So you have.
I don't have a problem with the get up and move. That's in. I don't have a problem with get up and move because that's built into a lot of the 16, 23, 21 stuff that the officer has to say get up and leave, and if they don't, then it's arrestful. I don't have a problem with adding that in. I thought it was in there. Maybe I'm wrong.
No, I no,
that's
no, 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 no. I'm,
not
s- I'm saying.
But I don't have a problem with the police officer.
No, that's all I want him to be able to do.
And
right?
If the guy says, fuck you, then what happens?
Give him a ticket or something. Because it's not. Because they're not laying down the middle of the street. You're laying down in the middle of the street, there's something else going on. That's right? So then you're doing an FD-12 or something like that. But you don't need to charge people with a crime for it because it's not how it's getting used. It gets used in a totally racist way, and it should not be expanded. Who gets considered inconvenient? Who is we need space around? The amount of distance I need from some people before I feel comfortable? No. I can't. This statute is a problem, and we should not make it any broader or any more vague.
So right. I it may be that this is not only here in the district, right, when disorderly, you know, when Council for Excellence was looking at this, there was lots of debate about this, nationally in other jurisdictions. This is exactly the kind, you know, because it's borders on a loitering type offense in terms of how it's applied, borders on, And again, loitering type offenses are contentious and questionable, and sometimes you know, there's been a lot of litigation around it. So this is a I expect this to be a difficult area, and it's also, just as a technical matter, hard to draw the line in these situations. I think, you know, there might be a much more agreement, maybe more agreement, not total agreement, but in particular examples, like almost like in a photograph, but like, right, like, you know, if you actually like saw this particular setup, but to say in words, you know, again, is it too broad to say inconveniencing? Well, that, you know, that, what does that mean, right? That's unclear. On the other extreme, again, if it's too impassable, meaning, well, you could have walked right, you know, I could step over the person, right? You know, like, the language is hard for this.
All the time. They stand in the middle of the street to take their pictures of the Capitol.
Yep, yep.
So I can't imagine we would ever arrest them.
And as long as the cop says move along, and they don't move along, I don't have a problem arresting them.
But there might be another reason that this needs to be clarified, which is that, like many statutes in the district, I'm not sure if this one has been challenged for vagueness.
I believe it has. I check it. I thought it
maybe
had.
Maybe not since it was
I thought the worst version actually had survived it. I thought this version, this only 5 years old, six years old, this one's more recent.
This one
I thought was an improvement over the one that had been approved.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was simply going to say, first of all, it's not our charge, and so it's interesting to me that, like, I have some recollection of when I came on board that there was some sort of tweak to this.
Well, there was a major rewrite.
Right,
at it.
Yeah.
It was like
it
a two-year committee
been,
at a council for
right.
excellence. Yeah.
So,
yeah,
that's exactly right. And that's what I was saying. This was actually an improvement over it. And I thought, and for the 1321 stuff, there were places where we said a police officer has to tell you to move and then you don't.
That's right.
And I don't have
right.
a problem with it being added to this either to overcome that.
Mm-hmm. Good. Well, we will try to address this. The direction we tried to go with this, and it maybe we can do a better job with this, is to again, what is the harm here? If it's not a trespass offense, a trespass, it's about some sort of public disorder or a risk, right? A risk that's arising from this. So the idea is to, what we were trying to go with this was an unreasonable hazard, was where the behavior is where you can tie it to a risk, an increased risk or a danger to that person, to others. That's when that becomes the hook on which to base liability. So anyway, that was our thrust for where we were going.
And actually, the unreasonable hazard, that was actually part of my problem. Because then the question becomes, you're laying and you're blocking a sidewalk, and the people walking around you in the street. Do I now have to prove how many cars came down the street to say whether it was unreasonable for you to step into the sidewalk, walk around and park a car and come back? Is that now a proof element for the unreasonable hazard? I mean, how does that work?
Yeah, and I think, you know, in part that's, you know, the... that gets to the technical part of, like, how do we say anything in words that gets these different scenarios? The D.C. Office of Police Complaints has had a number of complaints about the enforcement of this in unfair manner recently since the rewrite. They've suggested looking at this again. So I think it's something, right, we will try to see if we can do a better job on. And I think the direction we're, again, kind of trying to go is to anchor the offense in an increased risk or danger. But how to do that in language around it without being either too broad or too narrow, we will look at it again. Other thoughts on this particular point?
Now, you mentioned trespass. I was just going to ask if we could chat about that at some point as well.
Before we do the third one, why do we cut out passing through a park?
That third point, we had just thought it was kind of redundant since we had already had any path or the other parts. I could pull up the statute, but so it was not intended to be narrowing the offense so much as we thought it wasn't necessary given the rest of the language.
For that one,
yeah,
no?
let me pull it up. Sorry.
Yeah, you see.
So, again, and we had this definition, we had something off on
so
this, right?
Somehow what happened was at some point walkway got turned to public way, or public way turned to walkway.
Yeah, except the walkway.
And that would include presumably any sidewalk, trail. We assume that was kind of covering any kind of parky type place, but
yeah, so we meant so this walkway also should be public way,
yeah,
right? That's where
that should be public way or vice versa. The other thing too is that again, we used includes, and this is true for kind of many of these public way obstruction type things where we expect there to be instances where maybe there's a place that doesn't quite fit per se in that list, but canons of statutory construction would lead the court to say, okay, is this like a road? Is this like an alley or a highway? Is this like a sidewalk or a trail or a railway or bridge?
All right, so can we just then, as a compromise, put in a comment?
Yeah, just
that
be clear
walkway
that it
was meant to encompass what had previously been in the statute by park or reservation.
Yeah,
and then
sense.
We'll just leave it.
But it's walkways through parks. I mean, I remember.
Yes.
Right, it's not the.
It's not the park itself.
Maybe there is a park that is actually small enough that you could, there's some weird stuff in D.C., but I think, right.
I mean,
it's
remember fighting
pass.
For this in the council.
My recollection is this only applies to the path through it, sort of like a sidewalk,
right.
Not the park itself.
Right.
And that's why I don't really
right.
have a problem with walkway as
right.
long as the comment explains.
Clarify that.
That's what it meant.
Good, yeah. So, yeah, I think we're on the same page. It's just, we'll make sure that's clear.
I mean,
clear.
Parks away, you should... be hanging out. No, we went through that. People have called up and complained there were kids, there were 15-year-olds in the park, and I'm like, well, where would you, where the hell would you want them to
right.
be?
Well, playing games in the street. Now, there we can get them.
$5
fine for that.
Only a ball.
Only
not
ball.
A flat
that's,
object.
Was ball that
you can use
was
a frisbee in the streets.
Very good. We have missile issues. All right.
Okay.
Anything...
There's the unlawful demonstration definition. And
right. So why don't we come back to trespass? I think PDS had some comments on trespass, but OAG didn't. So maybe we kind of keep going through the OAG ones, and then we'll get back to trespass here in a bit. so unlawful demonstration. Anything to say?
So... OAG just suggested that we retain the language that's currently in the statute rather than the language that we had provided here. And just to give some context, and I think we might have mentioned this before, but the definition that is in the revised offense comes from the First Amendment Assemblies Act. Not quite verbatim, but almost. And we just felt like there was some gains in terms of making those consonant. But we felt like maybe some of the stuff in the current statute is a little bit redundant, a little bit, it's a big long list, and it's hard, I spent some time yesterday a little bit trying to think of any situations that would actually be different between the two definitions, the current one and the one that we have here, and I couldn't really think of any. And on top of that, again, our definition is arguably not broader, but a little bit with respect to the fact that we use includes rather than means. Again, we're kind of purposely trying to make it less of a... When we're making laundry lists, we want to use includes so that situations we hadn't anticipated are at least considered by the court.
Yeah, and I think part of the definitions that I was trying to focus on was some of the stuff that's lost, because the definition that's proposed is all large groups of people in action, as opposed to the way it's defined, which makes it clearer that individual behavior can... So it buttresses the other definition we already talked about. And so that's why I think you need some of those other examples in there. And yeah. I just didn't see a reason to change it if we're going to do that.
Right. We did not...
all of those are assembling, rallying, parading. Those are not things you do by
the
yourself.
Examples, right.
And if those are the examples, then I think that's going to give us... There's going to be Court of Appeals arguments over.
You are really after the people that lie down.
You have no idea.
Well, I, you know,
I'm getting a sense.
We do say by one or more persons,
and,
right?
Like, you know, that's, if they lie down and
explicitly in there,
and they've been lied to, that's a different story.
So we did not again intend any substantive change by this, and I think again at the very least what we could do is just.
But you understand my point. I just think you need some of that individual flavor to it.
You could add sitting and standing in line.
Yeah, whatever.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
Burglary, and I'm sorry. I think it probably makes sense to just go through the OG, and then we'll come back. Even though PDS had some of this stuff too. Maybe just was there anything on burglary that you wanted to raise or address?
Well, I guess the OAG's main, or at least Tarview main comment about the burglary offense is that situation where, you know, again, in order to get liability for first degree or right? You have to be in, another person has to be present in the dwelling. And OAG pointed out, you know, what happens if the defendant drags the person behind them into the dwelling after them or something like that? Well, then they're only getting second degree liability.
As opposed to pushing them ahead.
As opposed to pushing
and
them
ahead. And it's first degree. That to me seems like a weird circumstance.
It's kind of it seems like a technicality in a sense or something like that.
I think from our discussion, like we don't know, we have not kind of gone through kidnapping yet, and we wanted to kind of see too how that works with this,
because
any of these situations where you're forcing somebody into it, it might actually be a much more, the more serious charge maybe, and the more proper charge for that, arguably, would be kidnapping, right? And we want to be just kind of thoughtful about, are we kind of creating overlap by explicitly bringing in this, albeit very narrow, kind of burglary, when we know that particular fact pattern would entail kidnapping liability. So I think our sense was maybe.
but to clarify that. In a sense, there's a disparaged treatment. And I didn't mean to be flippant when I said as opposed to push the person in.
Mm-hmm.
Because it seems odd that should be the determinant as to whether you get the additional jail time is whether you pushed or pulled just for the sake of the burglary.
Right. My feeling is neither one should be burglary as opposed to both. I mean, that it is kidnapping, right? That the issue with burglary, it seems to me, and the reason that you have the greater punishment when someone's in the home is because that's friggin' terrifying that somebody comes in. But whether you get pushed in before or after, the terror is happening, right? It's not, oh my gosh, somebody just came in the house. Burglary is not the real thing that's going on here.
Right, whether you get dragged into the middle of the woods,
right,
or you get dragged into a
building,
into a house,
or into a dwelling, sort of seems... Or business.
The
yard.
Greater harm. Yeah.
Seems like not the burglary is just not the thing. It's, you know, it's right. What's the difference between into the woods and into the house? I think. But that you deal with it in some other way.
So anyway, I think take the point in we're gonna look at it, but we also kind of want to have some sense of where kidnapping is gonna go on this, because like again, how that works, and you know, our kidnapping offense is going to get reworked at least to have some gradations. Pretty much everybody has more than one gradation of kidnapping with this, you know, including such a vast range of conduct. So,
I mean, I don't mind putting off either of the choice until the kidnapping comes through, and we can see how it plays off as we have a note to come back to it.
Yeah. I assume under current law, again, I haven't thought this through from the kidnapping angle, but that fact pattern would constitute kidnapping also under current law, right?
Yeah, I remember some cases on like how far you got to move the person kind of thing.
Right.
You
so know, that, and not very and then
yeah,
gets,
I know, but that's the only thing I recall about it.
I know that there's a burglary case where it was close, but basically the guy did push her in before he got into the house, and it was like, you know, by
that satisfied.
Right. Yeah. That was
and that was upheld.
And that was upheld. But it was a close case because if the facts had gone the other way, it seemed from the way they talked about it that they would have given them not first degree burglary.
Yeah. Okay.
Good. The other piece clarifying where Watercraft is a dwelling, it is first degree, and we can definitely, you know. Yes, I think that was the intent, and you know we can look at how to do that in the commentary or something to clarify that. And last one was this burglary tools, and expand it to tools for cutting glass. I think we're generally fine with that. Like I think again the concerns go higher where it becomes an ordinary tool, right? You know, pliers or you know something like that. But when it's a glass cutting tool, which is still a very specialized object,
people come in through windows much as they
absolutely.
That was a minor.
That seems, and I think that was it for OAG comments.
Can we go back to unlawful demonstration?
Definitely. Was there anything more that you that OAG or
okay?
So unlawful demonstration. Go back to that.
All right. No one has any comments on the jury trial.
Oh, I didn't even.
So.
Where are that's. Let me see.
Can you scroll up to
Yeah, let me get back here.
What's the current penalty? I don't remember.
And that is really the issue there. Yeah. I mean, first of all, I don't know that it currently is, but almost more importantly is that in this jurisdiction, for it to be consistent with our statute that, that deals with that, it has to be framed in terms of the penalty. That's how it's done.
Yeah, and
is it currently?
Jury demandable? Or is that a change?
Yeah,
they do jury trials.
I believe it was, but I double check that.
We don't have to do indictments because it could be a misdemeanor
up to a year.
Oh, it could
be a misdemeanor jury trial.
Yeah. So right, I mean, we do a lot of them. DWIs can be juries. I need a 6 month sentence. I don't remember what
the fastest way to do that. Yeah. So
penalty is an 07.
So this is for which one?
1623
unlawful demonstration. So one thing that we wanted to do was throughout not to rely just on the number to communicate whether something is jury demandable.
So you're changing 16705?
No, did not say that. Yeah.
All right. So as long as 16705. Is there? I don't know how we get around the way that it's
right. So,
done.
So we haven't dealt with penalties yet, right? So, right. We've bracketed that. All we're doing right now is we're trying to very more clearly communicate, right? I think for any member of the public, right, the difference between 180 days and 6 months is a an insider thing for criminal law practitioners in the district. For everybody else, that's opaque. So what we want to do is make that clearer, and hopefully what we'll be able to do is have a provision that states that where it is true. Now again, where will that be true? That, you know, remains to be seen, right? I think in some places we've explicitly kind of dealt with this with the next batch on assault and assault police officer, right? Even though, again, we haven't gotten to look at the penalty provisions yet. It may be that we re-examine some of these what is jury demandable, what isn't, when we actually set penalties for some of these things, because they might go up, they might go down.
1675, which is what lays out the... Yeah.
By the way, they updated the online, which, you know, at times it's quicker than going through Westlaw. Before, this wasn't current, but now they've updated these, the whole the council's beta site. It's now current through December. What is this? Yeah, December 20th, 2017. So it's okay. It's now actually a more reliable source to go to. You know, anyway.
They've updated.
They did. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I was reading. So crowding, obstructing, and promoting, where all this stuff is 90 days. Did everybody already know that?
So I'm sorry. What were they?
90 days. So, so what's going to happen?
So I think we come back to examine this when penalties are in place, but any thoughts you have now? Like, look, we can always lower it, right? This does not this creates across the board presumption, but there is nothing.
I should have remembered that it was not jury demandable, mm-hmm. because we get those. You know, the IMF, 500 people arrested at the same time, 750 people arrested at the same time for some of these disorderlies, and in fact, some of the cases that might have gone rioting over the years, USA01 except, and then we get them for the disorderly. Mm-hmm. So picture after the inauguration, 500 jury trials.
We should definitely have jury trials. Yeah. It's the First Amendment. And wait, it is a jury trial. We're having it. And DC is speaking.
Well, I don't understand what that means.
We just had a jury.
But that was for rioting, not for disorderly, right. Not for blocking a passage.
This is for demonstration. They're separate now. She's asking about unlawful demonstration. I don't think it's for
anything. Oh, I know. I just looked up 07. I'm sorry.
No. They're all together in 07.
Yes, which is a 90-day offense. And I'm going back to the blocking passage, which is 90 days. Is that not a jury demandable on your thing? I'm sorry. I missed.
I must have misunderstood. I think they broke it up.
Okay, never mind.
It's
okay.
Only for the demonstration.
I thought you... Okay.
Yeah. All right. So I just want to make sure I understand. So you are acknowledging that is inconsistent with the way that 16705 sets up how jury demandability versus bench trials are defined.
No.
And it was not your intent to be trying to change that.
But we haven't set penalties at all, Renata, right?
Okay, but you've made this jury demandable, so right. Where did they come from, since it's currently a 90-day offense that under the current code would not be jury demandable? Well, I'm trying to just figure out what
that's right. So what's the rationale to tag this as jury demandable? You bet. And it is the First Amendment concern, right? And that by breaking this out versus the obstruction, which, you know...
And just for the record, there is an open question on the D.C. Circuit about whether obstruction is void for vagueness under the black notice prong.
Okay.
So it's the First Amendment, the idea that the demonstration aspect warrants it being jury demandable. Now, again, I would invite any other comments on this, but I think it gets something that.
Well, I'm just pointing out the issue here. We have the inconsistency. I mean, let's say that people decided we all agree it should be jury demandable. We have a bigger issue than that in light of this thing here. And so if it can just be reflected in the record that we have tagged that as an issue and we're going to have to address it.
Absolutely.
That's what I wanted to make
clear. This is going to be true everywhere, again, particularly once we look at penalties, right? I assume there will be, as has happened in the past, a lot of interest in jockeying around penalties with jury demandability in mind and where that's set. One thing I think, again, we want to do as a just purely procedural matter, is more clearly make the statutes say, like in plain language, whether they are jury demandable or not. That's separate from the policy.
I think it sounds like whatever way we go, leaving aside this, we were going to end up with some kind of conforming amendment on 16705, right? In fact, you guys already kind of said it, because we already had previewed the fight over which way you toggle, whether you make stuff, whether, because we were doing classifications, right? And getting rid of 180 days and 6 months is a choice. And so it was going to be either 180 days, but specifically say where there's a jury trial, or 6 months, but say when it's not, whatever it was, which would have required, I assume, some kind of conforming amendment for 16705 that says, follow these general rules, but if the statute says specifically otherwise, do what the statute says, because I assume the statute doesn't say that now. So we were already probably going to have to go that way, just because we were going to be forcing things into classifications and not having a 6 month, 180 day fight anymore. And then this, assuming it says at some point, follow what the statute says, if it specifically says, we wouldn't have this problem even if we made this 90 days. Because then there could be.
But I misunderstood what you said, because I thought you were actually saying something different, which was the statute, you can have the 180 day to 6 month distinction, but wherever it's 180 days or 6 months, wherever it's 6 months, you specifically say jury trial.
Right.
So that anybody who flips through it doesn't have to say, aha, 6 months means jury trial.
Right.
So it doesn't necessarily mean an amendment to the statute. It's just a clarification that when it applies, you put jury trial
right.
in whenever it says 6 months.
So these are yes, both.
So
Laura's right. You know, when we had talked before about classifications, that's where we had addressed this, and there was a disagreement, right? Right. You know, on which should be the default, right?
Play the
6 months, or I'm sorry.
Is it play the tape? I remember.
Oh yeah. So right. You know, that has not been, you know, resolved. And that would affect this, right? So that is another issue that we had previously talked about. And again, the idea is we can, depending on where things end up, we can definitely make conforming amendments. We want to be clear in each, our goals are to be clear in each statute, whether it is or is not jury demandable.
That's fine, but as Dave is pointing out, and what I was getting at is, so it's a couple of different things. Maybe there, when we get to penalties, we're changing what the penalty is.
Yeah.
I think what Dave is saying that is, it doesn't mean that 16705 cannot stand. It's just you use that as the guide, and where it's 6 months or more, then the clarification is this is jury demandable. But we wouldn't necessarily be agreeing that we are changing that view, that is the thing.
So I think maybe the most helpful thing at this stage, since we haven't gotten to penalties, is as you look at each of these, right, offenses, to put aside the question of penalties, which again, and how that lines up, would we have to make conforming amendments? Which way would they be? Is the default 6 months? Is the default 180 days? And instead, for now, just focus on should it be jury demandable or not? And again, we will review that when we look at penalties. But for now, up front, and particularly if it's going to be a change, right, we should talk about that.
I'm having trouble. I mean, maybe it's just that I grew up in a DC system, so I think of jury demandability as tied to the penalty. And I don't know how I wrap my head around making a distinction for a 90-day jury trial in one case, but a 180-day non-jury trial in another case, and how I justify that.
Because it's the First Amendment.
No, but that only gets you by this one example. If this is the only time we're ever going to do that, then we could
for
deal
90
with this
days?
One.
Well, we don't have any penalty.
No, I understand. I understand. But to get to you saying, should it be a jury
sure.
or not,
sure.
to me that inherently ties to the penalty. you know, the more serious the penalty, the more likely the jury trial. The more de minimis the penalty, the less likely for a jury trial. I don't know how to analyze it any other way.
Yeah. Well, in
when
that,
it involves a First Amendment. Yeah. It's like a fine okay. carve-out so, for
now. No, but that's fine yeah, but if that's the only example. That's what I'm saying. If that's the only time that applies...
We'll see it.
Yeah.
That got us far and far.
On property offenses, right, the First Amendment is the only reason to deviate from that, and it's a consideration that seems to have been involved in Council for Credit Excellence, you know, recommendations, you know, like talking
not
about
the original one, because in 2012 they didn't recommend it.
First Amendment concerns, you'll see in the assault on the police officer, right? It's front and center there, right, given the recent NEAR Act.
That's not about First Amendment. I think it's fairly clear in the committee report that what that is about, and I understand that, is the view that people believe that assault on a police officer resisting arrest was a pretext for other things. And therefore, if you make it jury demandable, you are allowing the community to judge that. Right. So that's what that is about.
I agree.
Right. I think he was suggesting another carve-out, right, which isn't going to happen here.
Yeah, well, or I mean, you can imagine, like, in sexual context, where, like, on low-level sex, as Renata points out, right, I mean, it is true that, in general, the higher, first of all, it's a matter of constitutional law, but also as a matter of policy, the more severe the penalty, that would raise a desire to have a jury. But there can also be other reasons where you'd want give the community an opportunity to weigh in. And in those situations, it shouldn't be the case that, well, you necessarily have to kick the penalty up higher if you actually don't think a higher penalty is necessary. Nothing stops the legislature from saying, well, in this particular context, even though we have this general rule that once a penalty goes beyond a certain point, we want a jury, that... You know, there may be other instances where it's a really low penalty, but we still want the community to have an opportunity to weigh in.
The cruelty of children.
Yeah, maybe. I just raised the APO as a second example. Those are the only two that I know of, right, that we've encountered so far. Trespass.
Because it's a public building is 6 months, and private is 30 days.
Yes, right. But that comes from.
Right. So,
that's
so.
Thing.
Right. Well, in public space, you know, right, and it's a half step removed from, you know, kind of First Amendment.
That was a Pat Riley Chairman Mendelsohn fight over the course of years.
Very good. I can only imagine. I guess again, what I would encourage everybody now. It's tough because I think before it was so programmed that the number dictates that jury demandable or not, it may end up largely lining up that way or almost entirely. There may be just this might be the one, you know, like there might be one or two exceptions
so the
where
reverse can also
it
be
dips true. Lower.
It could be larger than 6 months, but we take away the jury demand.
No, then we have constitutional.
I don't understand the principle-ness of, why? The 6 months not constitutional, a year is constitutional.
More than 6 months.
There is actually
constitutional. Okay. Yeah. So, you know, even the constitutional ruling, right, it set this, like, bright line, but basically, you know, kind of said, like, look, again, here's a kind of a safe harbor. It has
it's
to be jury demandable.
It's a floor,
beyond,
not
it's a floor.
It's not,
But they really said, like, look, we have to kind of, you have to look, again, it's the indicia of seriousness. And usually penalty is a proxy for that, but not always. And so that bright line that they drew, the floor that they gave, is one marker. But the legislature can go elsewhere on other things. When we look at penalties, there's a lot of evidence that penalties have been quite obviously from driven in significant part by concerns about jury demandability and the court processing costs and difficulties that come with that. And this has been an issue as it's flared up each time with the Misdemeanor Streamlining Acts. You know, felonies were changed to 180-day, you know, offenses. A lot of things were shifted around because of this. So I expect it's going to be an issue going forward. And again, I would encourage just everybody, until we get to the penalties, to see whether there is something about the offense in its nature. Special something, you know, APO, because it's a public servant and there's this particular history and particular concern, something about First Amendment.
I wasn't
where
kidding
it
about
seems
cruelty to children.
I'm sorry?
I wasn't kidding about cruelty to children, right? Because, I mean, I remember talking about it in Red Book. I don't know what we would have been talking about. But very different cultural ideas about what's appropriate discipline and what's not, right? To me, I mean, I think it's a felony, so the question of the jury doesn't come up. But if there were a misdemeanor version, I would push for it being jury demandable because people have such different ideas about what's appropriate discipline, and it's and they are cultural ideas that are bound up with race and class. That I think it doesn't. Well, anyway, I think there's lots of areas where you sort of, in the same way with APO, where you sort of say people can have really different ideas about whether that's on which side of the line that conduct falls, or how they interpret.
Yeah, and we have definitely not gotten there on child cruelty, but we'll keep that in mind. And I think, again, going forward on any other offense too, if there's, you know, reasons either on the other side too, from like, you know, look, there are large numbers of, you know, arrests in this, and like the case processing aspect actually weighs heavier here for this particular offense than it normally does, and so we need to look, you know, like actually that weighs in favor of you know, making sure it is, you know, it's just bench trials. That's notable, right? Like that would be helpful. Yes.
You may want to get the stats on demonstrating a problem to see how many of those are charged a year.
Yeah, and you know, unfortunately, I think from the
especially in inauguration years and
yeah, and how that's good.
I know that you guys don't like to receive edits, but I don't know when else to mention them while we're on it. You take a look at your commentary in two different places. You are switching D and E. I don't know which one it says. I think you say D is a reference to the prosecutorial authority, E is the penalty. Whichever it is, it's actually flipped
around,
and it's done like that in two different places. So
you bet.
Make your note to go back in now and fix it before we
will do. And we've gotten a number of, you know, kind of feedback on some of these points, and yeah, there are a number of them. Just, you know, typos in places. Sometimes it's, you know, right, things like this. Maybe we move to the PDS comments, or did you want to go to talk about trespass? Or was that what it was?
I do want to talk about that, but if PDS has something in there.
Well, I think
trespass is
the
report
first
11.
Is
so why don't we do that, because want to get for Bryson to get 11.
And PDS also had some issues on that. But so why don't we go to trespass, and Renata, what was it you wanted to raise there?
I can remember. I didn't want to talk about. As I'm scrolling back to it, I think one of the things I wanted to talk about was inference. You can infer that a person doesn't have consent. Just want to make sure I understand that. That's when there is an absence of evidence that they had actual knowledge. Or does that inference extend?
It's an option. You can, you know, it's a prosecution can choose to not present evidence as to actual knowledge.
Right, but if the prosecution,
but it's your choice,
did,
yeah.
I guess what I'm trying to figure out is what's your view, because it's just not clear to me, of how that inference applies.
So I think
I'm trying to get to it. I'm sorry.
I think it's just an alternative. So the procedural question, the procedural questions are always kind of weird because those are more practice-oriented. But our thought, at least, was that even right now, with the permissive inference, it can be offered as not a replacement for proof of the actual mental state, but as a possible alternative. The jury might be instructed on the basic elements of the offense with the mental state, and also, if you also find these things, you can infer the mental state. You don't have to use that
as
inference.
As to just
a court of appeals case on it, and it sort of gives out the language of how you instruct the jury that it's permissible to do it, but they're not required to.
I think
there are like three jury instructions that have permissive.
And the courts become very critical.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Very critical.
PDS had also raised this question about, or questioned the permissive inference at all, right? Like that was kind of your more baseline concern was we don't need this at all.
I remember when they added the B1 as vacant and secured because
it was people in vacant.
People were going into vacant buildings that were blocked up.
Any
arguments? Well, there was no sign.
Right. Part of the supposed. So it's been a while since I've looked at the legislative history, but I do believe part of the concern was there was a feeling among MPD officers that they actually had to find the owner of the vacant or whomever and ask, "Hey, is this person or persons are they allowed to be here?" And the permissive inference was theoretically put in as a policing measure
to give them probable cause to
exactly.
Yeah, that actually went on.
But
that didn't start with the police. That started with judges.
Yeah, or whomever. I don't remember. But yeah.
No.
I mean,
what you picked up was when the police reacted to it. But it actually started with judges' comments in court about whether there was PC and suppressing evidence and stuff based on those things.
Yeah.
So our intent was to keep that, right? Or, to carry that forward. Laura had raised the additional point about something about visibility of signs.
So the first point Laura raised was whether it should be in there at all. And then the second point is if it is in there, there was a point about the signage being, I guess specifically subpart B2,
right.
Whether the signage should be visible from prior outside the point of entry. And that actually, we thought we had intended to convey that with reasonably visible from the person's point of entry, I guess.
Yeah. So the concern you had raised, Laura, was addressed by this, but maybe not or not well enough, which is to say, that reasonably visible, there's a sign that's covered with mud, and
this
it's like, you know.
Katja wrote this, so I can't. I don't know if she didn't see that language or if she thought it was inadequate.
If you want to follow up, we can talk more about
I see what you're saying, and I would feel the same way. So I don't know if she read it differently or didn't see it.
Because it's pretty clear to me that the defense is going to be the sign was in the front and I came through the back.
Right.
These inferences are also framed in terms of a jury may infer. These are not going to. I mean, may not be jury trials. So
I think
the word should be
point.
The trier. Yeah. It should be a whole phrase: the trier of fact or fact finder.
Fact finder. Yeah. Good. We'll think that. Yeah. That's. Yep. We'll have to revise that, and consistently. we tried to set up these permissive inferences, phrased in a uniform manner, and kind of following them, And getting away from, some offenses now have the whole prima facie evidence of blah, da, da. And that has been litigated, and it's still, sticky. And so we're trying to, get away from the prima facie evidence of to a permissive inference, which
courts
have upheld.
We should never refer to jury anywhere. Yeah. It should always be finder of fact or whatever term we use.
Yep.
Because you could always have a bench trial even for a jury demandable one.
Absolutely. Yeah. We'll stick with we'll revise that and try to make it across the board. Anything else on trespass either that you had, Renata, or some of the other points or anything else?
I had one response. So PDS brought up the idea of a watercraft, I think, was in this section, and whether the engine should be inside or outside,
That's a different section.
Oh, okay. Never mind, then. I'll wait till we get to it.
The only other Did you want to talk about the intent issue in consent? Or did we want to not?
Oh, well, let's do this first, and then we'll get to the definitions.
So I don't think that there's anything else for PPS's comments that...
So we're done with trespass.
Yeah, unless there's anything else. So PDS had some other comments. I don't know that there was.
They're all worth doing. Well, there was, and then this one. I don't know if that was what we were worried about the arson or now, but this is the.
Oh right. So, and that did come up here.
In burglary.
In burglary. So, on burglary, let's turn to that real quick. And this was an issue.
Is the joint occupancy?
No.
No.
Which I think is, I mean, yeah.
The A instead of the, according to the thing. Yeah, that seemed fine. Changing the A to the. What Bryson was raising was the recklessness as to. The presence of another person, right? Mm-hmm. As a basis, instead of it being strict liability, the way we have it in the burglary, this also shows up in arson, right? So, again, is it a matter of strict liability, or should it be, as PDS was recommending, it be recklessness as to the presence of another person in the dwelling? I don't know there's much to say. I think it's probably one where there's just going to be different points of view on this. But if there is any comment or discussion people want to have on that.
How does the reckless play out? So what do I have to do to be reckless?
For the meaningful sense, is just aware of a risk.
So, no, but I mean, like, in the burglary, for me to understand the difference between in fact and reckless, I got to... go to a house to do something illegal. How do I do it recklessly as to someone's home, and how does that play out differently?
Well, where you're getting your permissive inference, right? Where it's a boarded up building and blah blah blah, and so right that if it turns out there is somebody inside, right? I would say for the recklessness, I'd say I it seemed like a completely abandoned building. Right, I'm saying that's the scenario.
For the permissive inference. Yeah. I'm talking about in burglary in general.
Right, the government would have to prove.
You know, I go to burglarize a house. It's not that kind of house. It's not one. It's all boarded up. It's just a house sitting on a street corner.
With all the newspapers piled up?
No. I'm just saying a regular burglary. Or is this only applied to that? I'm sorry.
It was both. Maybe okay, I'm just reading it. Okay, I'm sorry. I'll stop interrupting you. How about if we start there?
I thought your comment was that it should be reckless as to someone home in the general burglary.
Yes.
Okay. Now, so forget the inferences for the moment.
Okay, wait. Let me
So
catch
what
up.
I'm trying
So say what you said again.
Okay. So they said reckless as to someone is home. And I'm trying to think in a typical burglary, I break into the guy's house, what the practical difference is between reckless that somebody might be home versus in fact is home, because anytime I go into a house, somebody may be home. I don't understand how the recklessness works in this context and what the difference is.
So it's a question of whether you were aware of a substantial risk. So think about if it's either recklessness or even negligence, that provides the defendant with an opportunity to say, under these specific circumstances, you know, either wasn't aware or I shouldn't have been aware that someone was home. So, for example, like the situation Laura just alluded to, if there was a pile of 30 newspapers and the defendant could introduce testimony, that in fact he specifically tried to set this up so that because he researched it, he thought
shoveled or whatever.
Yeah, or actually that he just let's say it was someone who worked in the house doing like construction and overheard that the family was going to be away for family vacation. And because he specifically wanted to make it a real simple burglary, didn't want to enhance any, you know, create any sort of risk. Like, you know, so the burglary was specifically planned to be done while the family who lived there was away on vacation. And then it just happens to turn out that the nanny popped in for 30 minutes to grab a set of keys at the exact time when the burglary was done. right? And so in that situation, if it's strict liability, we don't care. But if it's negligence, then the defendant can argue that under the circumstances he shouldn't, like he had no reason to believe.
So while the mens rea is knowing for the fact that the thing is a dwelling, is now split off from the somebody being in there, so they get another chance to argue that. So what if it's a dwelling, basically? I knew of these other things or observed these other conditions that made me only negligent as to whether someone should have been in there or could have been in there, regardless of the fact that it's the dwelling.
Right. Yeah. So those are the differences.
Right, but it's not a well. Okay.
I mean, you know, it's not. It
right now the way it is that if you know that's you know it's a dwelling, the
it's
legislature
right
has
now.
Said, and somebody's in there, then there you go.
Right.
Then, you know, if it's a dwelling and you know that it's a dwelling,
then you're assuming the risk
you're damned if somebody's in there.
Except that's not, it's not structured that way, right? It's, you know, there's a fallback of it's a dwelling, right? Or it's a building and in fact someone's inside. And so we're just saying tweak the gradations, right? It's a dwelling. And you're reckless as to whether someone is inside, and you know,
well,
and someone is, and however it would be written, someone's inside, and you are reckless about it. But otherwise, right? Then you could just bring it down, right? I mean, it's not like a not guilty. It's
right.
not. It's burglary.
It just this just goes to your, what your basic theory of grading is, and you know, There are factors or additional facts, for example, here, like where the person was present, or let's say, you know, in the federal system, I think a lot of mandatory minima hinge upon what type of gun it is, not just whether it's a gun, but what type it is, right? Whether or not you think that it's just a matter of strict liability and you're comfortable with continually boosting levels without any mens rea as to that factor, or whether some threshold mens rea ought to apply. It's, you know, it's kind of like a basic policy decision.
Why is this structured? I'm sorry to get off of this, and we can certainly go back, but it just hit me. It's structured a little funny to me, because the whole first part of C2 for second-degree burglary is really what constitutes first-degree burglary. And then, because you move immediately into penalty, you're left with the definition of second-degree burglary really being sort of an inference out of the other thing, right? So you got first degree burglary up there, right? And then, so it says, you're guilty if dwelling and strict liability person is inside. For second degree, it says, a person is guilty of first degree.
That's a typo.
Okay, so it's, okay, yeah, oh, thank God. And I'm like, oh my God, this has just blown my mind. All
right, right.
Thank you.
There you go.
Yeah.
Now you understand why I became so animated.
Wait a minute.
Yeah. So, okay, yeah. Can we fix that one?
Yeah, okay. Absolutely.
Yeah, we did. Yeah.
Good. Well, I
as you can imagine,
yep.
I don't agree.
Yeah.
That's one thing, look at it from the defendant's perspective.
Yeah.
To the nanny who's in the house and has somebody, you know, watering
sure.
the plants
sure.
while the person's away and has somebody break into the house, there's no less fear for that person in the house than if the person knew that there was somebody in the house and they broke it. From the victim's perspective, it's an identical situation.
Exactly.
Yeah, although, to be, I mean, and that's a perfectly legitimate position, but I'll just point out that, like, so for example, murder of a police officer, it's not strict liability, it's whether the person killing the person knew or at least should have known the victim was a police officer. So there are many instances where we apply, or where the counsel has applied a mens rea to a circumstance above and beyond already blameworthy conduct as a prerequisite to providing for liability. Now, that's not to say that should be done here.
And for gradation.
Right.
But my guess is that historically that doesn't go back as far into English common law of your king and your castle and your home and the inviolability of your home. I think the law probably goes back further on this than on APOs, but I don't know.
good. Yeah. I remember years ago we had some discussions on burglary, and I think it was all about it was all about the abandoned house and a homeless person. That was the hypo. It wasn't a punch bowl, but it was and that was it. And again, like, I think there's just some different, fundamentally different perspectives on how liability should work here. So if there's any further discussion, let's see on you didn't have anything more, correct?
Unless you wanted to talk about the intent part for consent. So David raised the point on mistake of
right.
Fact.
Well, right. So the definitions.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, not on burglary or trespass.
Well, right. So anything more on the, again, report number 11? I think we've gone through most of the comments. Not all the PDSs. There were a number, but if there was anything more you wanted to raise or discuss with anybody. All right. Good. Well, then let's move to back to 8, which had the definitions, because one of those connects with what Bryson was just saying, and a comment from OAG about attempts, attempt liability. do you want to? I will pull it up on the screen if you want to.
So for the definition of consent, OAG comment noted that. In a particular factual situation involving an undercover police officer, certain kinds of property offenses would, because of the way consent is defined, certain kinds of property offenses would result in attempt liability, not completed liability, if the supposed victim is a police officer. So, yeah. For example, right, the person is selling is committing like a traffic and stolen property, like a TSP. Going to sell a stolen bicycle to an undercover police officer. And the other undercover police officer pretends to gladly accept this thing, whatever it is, and then arrests the defendant. And OAG says correctly, I think, that under the general part and the way that consent is defined, that defendant would be guilty of an attempted, whatever, rather than a completed one.
Where? So why?
That is just. So imagine, imagine you're...
Police can't buy
stolen
bicycles.
Yeah, so there's one case, there's actually one case on this in D.C. case law that I found, and that was a TBWR case. And an undercover plainclothes officer is hanging outside a metro station, and a defendant comes up to him and says, hey, I'll sell you this $20 metro pass for $10. And the cop looks at it. This defendant thinks the cop is just a rube, like, whatever. Cop looks at it, realizes it's a bogus metro pass, and says, sure, here's $10. And the instant the defendant puts the $10 in his pocket, you know, the police officer takes out his badge, arrests the guy, and he gets charged with TBWR. So, actually, in that case, the DCCA reversed it because the taking without right was with the consent of the officer. The officer wanted this transaction to go through because then he could arrest the defendant. Under our code, that would be, I think, a mistake of fact. So you'd be guilty of an attempted, whatever it was, TBWR or whatever TBWR is now. So OAG suggested adding in a provision that would create complete liability for those instances where we have undercover cops posing as buyers or sellers or something like that in cases involving consent.
Yeah, basically, sting. I think if you sell to a cop in a sting operation, it should be the same penalty as you sell to anybody else. As far as the defendant's concerned, they've completed the offense.
Wait, so, and where I don't understand the comment. Where is the problem?
It's not so much a problem in the definition itself. It's more just that is the logical kind of outcome.
So if you look on the screen, maybe this would be a helpful example. Yeah. Sorry about the glare. Let me actually maybe bring it down. Maybe better for the glare. So this is, you know, David put this is Dave's sheet. You know, it's for FIVA. So it has, you know, knowingly does this with consent of the owner, okay? And again, our inference is that you not only have to show it was knowingly, but that you, in fact, had consent of the owner. And then we also have that, indeed, the consent
being obtained by undue influence, and so you have to prove that, and that the person knew that the consent was obtained by undue influence. So, you know, the concern is the person, you know, may have thought that, you may be able to have the mental state, but you cannot prove that the kind of the actus reus portion of that in E, the consent was obtained by undue influence. Well, that just isn't true
in a sting operation.
There was an elderly person. What is
they're
happening?
Acting like they get an old person. They get my dad. It happens to him. This is untrue. Let's say my dad was law enforcement. Or former law enforcement.
Wait, that's a deputized.
He's law enforcement. They got an old cop. This is so like politically incorrect, right?
Hold on. Hold on. Let me explain.
They're posing as a vulnerable adult. So let's not make them elderly. I was making them elderly. You don't have to be. The UC is posing as a vulnerable adult, right? So they have some sort of situation where they're...
It's actually the next paragraph down. If you say, let's see, if you just read that.
Wait, what's the part where...
that you actually don't have.
Because they did not obtain it by undue influence. They obtained it from a cop thinking that they were doing it by undue influence.
So they did everything.
But the person also isn't a vulnerable... You can't pretend to be a vulnerable adult.
Why can't you?
What could you pretend?
Maybe it's better.
Are I like a little bit vulnerable looking today?
Imagine it's just a fraud. Imagine it's like fraud. Instead of FIVA, imagine it's just plain old fraud, consent by deception.
Okay.
Oh, well, I'm so sorry, Indra. Yeah. She might be right. You got a D and an E.
You're absolutely right.
You cannot pretend to be a vulnerable adult.
You
could be, again.
We
can adjust our hypothetical to include a police officer who is an elderly person or a vulnerable adult.
An elderly person?
That definition.
You
can. So that's just their fraud.
Yeah, so this is an issue of an inculpatory mistake, and it cuts across issues, so to just to test the intuitions, right? So let's say someone has sex with someone else thinking that the other person that they're having sex is a child, but in fact the person's not a child, and the person's of age. So that would be an attempt... But following, or at least could be an attempt.
We don't think so in our exploitation case,
right,
where the detective is the person sitting on the other end of the computer. And I'm not giving anything away. Everybody knows that's what they do.
Right. And so the question is just whether or not the inculpatory mistake, it actually goes to like whether results even matter, right? Because in this situation, the result of the crime, which is the taking of property of another without consent, hasn't been realized because the property was actually like given up. So if you think of the social harm of theft is when there's actually a taking in the same way with you know offense against persons, let's say, so then it would make sense that this would be charged as an attempt.
The problem with this
is the problem with FIVA. It's always been
because
our position that
you
this
have
was
undue
a mess.
Influence with someone who's only pretending. How do we cross the threshold of like you wore me down when really I can't wait for you to wear me down so I can entrap you?
It's even beyond that because I'm not giving anything away to say in the context of elderly and vulnerable adults that what really the council should be concerned about is that a lot of times it's not you don't have to have undue influence. People get elderly and vulnerable people to do things because they convince them that they are doing it out of a sense of love. So this statute, in our view, we have stated this officially, is a place where we would like to change things. Can we bring up another problem?
We could do a different example. Basically, I'm really only getting to where any time it requires consent, and you have an undercover police officer involved in a sting.
is basically the issue. I mean, I only put it there because that was the one I was reviewing.
And there are two, there are overlapping problems with stings that draw controversy. One of them is the inculpatory mistake, whether the mens rea of the defendant should matter. And then another is the extent to which the intent of the officer influences the overall conduct of the defendant, and it bleeds into there's a long gray slope into entrapment, right? And nobody knows exactly where that ends. How many cards do you? Oh, give me some more cards. Oh, wait, how many?
Okay, so let's take it out of that context.
People are you supposed to rob? Let me.
You have undercover officers in the metro on that little slab where I would never think anyone would lie down, but they do, and they have an iPhone sticking out. Okay, now.
And the person
goes up and takes their iPhone and runs away with it.
So but
that doesn't implicate my what I'm
it
saying.
It doesn't?
No, because I'm not consenting to them taking it just because my phone is
it's lying
is
there.
Here. That's not a consent issue to me.
Okay. All right, so that's not a good one.
So the I put up fraud. Yeah, maybe fraud is easier because consent. the key is this, like, it's it's the consent
by deception
or by something which in fact wasn't really there. So so here again, maybe it's helpful to think about this in a more general fraud context.
Yeah.
Again, I think the policy question is whether it's an attempt, which is, you know, lower.
Yes, attempt.
Or is
it's
it,
a complete
is it
crime.
At a complete level?
It's a complete,
level.
Complete crime.
No,
it
except,
is.
Except where's the... I sort of feel like it depends. This is the same slippery with the undue influence. This is exactly what Don was
those
saying.
Are, but they're two I'm different sorry. Issues.
Well, it's hard to so, tell. It's like not a fact-free thing, right? But to pretend... To be deceived.
Okay, so let me give you this hypo so I can get it out of it. Because there's two different issues which he recognized, I think, were two separate things. Let's say you got a UC who was the UC lying on the bench with the phone exposed. All right, and maybe there are people who say that is enticing people. My God, who's not going to... Some people believe. Who's not going to snatch the phone if it's just lying out there? I have a different view of that, but okay, so maybe that gets in that. So now, let's see if I can do this. Now UC is done for the day. UC gets up now. UC is about to go in and get off the clock. So UC in UC's own mind is not even engaged in UC operation anymore. But person saw UC getting up, saw UC place a couple of iPhones inside jacket pockets now. UC going about business. Now person... Oh, this is not good, because now I got a robbery. Because it's a robbery. And it's a taking. And it's not... UC can never...
So
I'm sorry.
The thing would be like this, right? So I'm an innocent person, just a normal human being. And Don says, you know, buy some...
Normal. We have to deal with that.
Yeah.
Everyone.
Right. So Don says, buy some of these oil shares. I'm going to open up an oil rig in some country. And I guarantee you 1,000% profits. And I'm like, oh, great. So I give him $100, right? And obviously, he's scamming me. And then he does the same thing to Richard. But Richard is a cop. And Richard knows that this is a scam. And he's dealt with Don before. But Richard gives him $100, right? The question is, should... In my case, should Don be guilty of completed fraud? And in Richard's case, should he be guilty of an attempted fraud or a completed fraud?
That's basically the problem.
And let me, just some perspective, like, we've seen examples of this being treated in different ways in different jurisdictions with somewhat haphazardly, right? Which is to say, like, there aren't kind of clean, uniform rules about this in jurisdictions where it's like across the board, any sting operation, you know, is still treated. If all the other facts are the same, it's treated as a complete offense. No, there tend to be exceptions here and there. And again, it's just very scattershot.
So two questions.
Yeah.
How did the council deal with this issue in the context, I believe, of receipt of stolen property.
Right.
And how and what does the DCCA say about this? Or maybe so we could, I just like even outside DC.
Sure, sure.
And I was going to say very specifically in the context of sexual exploitation of children cases, because it seems to me that you have a lot of litigation about that in that context.
Yeah.
So I think, so I don't know the answer for that particular context, but I believe there's a special statutory exception for undercover officers for sexual exploitation of children.
Really?
Well, we've got the fictitious child.
We've got that's what
I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
And I think children are different.
Right. Well, in RSP too. So like RSP, right? They've gone out of their way to say it's.
Yeah,
it doesn't actually have to be stolen
was.
Property, right? Again, it's the belief that it was stolen property,
right.
Which
but
is to
got
say,
fixed in another way.
Yeah,
it did.
That's
but
what I'm trying to figure out. What
again, ultimately, there was there's litigation and legislative involvement in saying essentially sting operations are the same. In the RSP context, right?
Because
like, that's
before.
Where they came out.
Yeah, they were prosecuted as impossibility attempts before, and then the council redrafted the statute, but they didn't redraft. I mean, they could have redrafted all the other property offenses to say, taking property, believing.
But that wasn't the issue before them.
Right.
Like
no, exactly.
To me, the deception stuff slides you down the slope so much faster because. Which I feel like children sort of are different, and I don't mind sort of blocking that off and saying that's completed. But here it seems like you might ask some follow up questions or something, and Richard is never going to, because his whole idea is to keep pulling Don in. And that's wrong. Like where that moment is, where Richard has just, quite frankly, been his own sort of deceiving whatever and pulled because it's a slippery, particularly steep and slippery slope. I think it should be attempt. It doesn't mean no liability.
There's also a crossover with inchoate crimes where the police officer engages in the what would be illegal conduct were they not a police officer with an accomplice or with co-conspirators who are then liable for the offense, and different jurisdictions handle that differently. So the limitations are there not just for the single person sting, they're also there for the multi-party sting.
Yeah, although I will say one thing that's really interesting is that the council, in drafting the district's general solicitation statute, only applied it to crimes of violence. And I know we have a few specific solicitation in the sex realm, but it's interesting that they specifically chose not to make it a crime to solicit any felony, for example, not to make it a crime, because in a lot of these situations, right, that would be, you could get a solicitation. So under district law, asking a police officer, an undercover officer, to go commit a theft is not criminalized, but asking the police officer to commit a crime of violence would be. So it's just interesting that when the council was putting it together, that they chose to exclude that whole host of solicitation. It would have been easy enough to just say solicit any crime.
You go back to kind of current law. Really, frankly, the only time it's really been talked about was in RSP. And maybe if we looked at the legislative history, we haven't gone there yet to fictitious child kind of situations. There just isn't case law on this outside of this one older TPWR case, which actually goes the other way, right? And said no liability at all. And the rest is silence, right? Which is the typical thing. I think we don't have much guidance. I think for property offenses, we can look again at the RSP legislative history on some of that, and kind of like maybe there was some broader language which would suggest that they think other property sting operations should be similarly handled. I don't know. I think it was pretty limited to that. This is a new area.
I'm trying to remember the context of how that came up, because I know.
Well, it's just the definition of stolen property.
No, I understand, but why it was a specific RSP and it wasn't
because
what the hearing was about.
They had stings. The reason is because they had stings where people were coming and stealing from a warehouse, they thought. But it was like the police.
Fact.
It was MPD's warehouse where they had put all this stuff in it.
Here's the other thing I say: the recommendations on attempt penalties, I think, would boost the maximum punishment for penalties for multiple property crimes. Now, to what extent the labels, what is, whether you think what's important is that, the recommendation I think was a 50% discount, whereas I think under current district law, the difference between an attempt and a completed property crime is, with a lot of these, it can be, from like years to, 60.
I guess where I'm coming from, and then I'll stop talking on this issue, is that from the defendant's perspective,
right,
nothing has
changed.
It's
the same. It is the same.
And
absolutely.
Stings, non-entrapment situations aside, are an effective law enforcement tool that combat preying on people for a whole host of offenses, and then I don't see why the penalties should differ in that situation as in the RSP. How the city council does that, that's
okay. I'll just note that you made the exact opposite argument about a person being present in a dwelling, right? It's not about their intent, it's about whether the person is
about the result, right?
No, but that's because of the house. But that's sort of like she said about children, I'm saying about housing.
Yeah.
The housing, to me, was an inviolate thing, and that's got a long history.
Yeah.
I'll tell you how I see it, those two things. I see it in a different way. I see it as to what society is trying to deter. And because we think dwellings can so often present those terrible results because you can get something or someone, I guess more appropriately, that you don't expect. We've decided that if people are thinking, people who probably don't actually read the code, they
right.
would commit a crime. But the thought is, if you understand the law, you would be deterred, at least from choosing that type of an edifice. And I think society, maybe the council would have a view that, because of entrapment issues, maybe they don't agree with me that undercover operations and stings, as we call them, serve a purpose so that we deter other crimes.
So there's an empirical question. There's an empirical question as to whether or not that distinction is one that is actually going to, whether the distinction between a first and a second degree as a matter of human psychology is something that influences the behavior of criminals. And then secondarily, whether or not there is a relevant blameworthiness distinction separate and apart from what the deterrence is.
It could just be the blameworthiness. But I think
I think that's pretty clear.
The concern that we're having is
hurting
that
people versus stealing stuff.
We definitely want to say that people with a culpable mental state can be considered blameworthy in many circumstances, and that people who do harm can be blameworthy in many circumstances, and that maybe they should be more blameworthy where the two overlap. And I think that's what PDS's position is, right?
But that's a fluke that person.
Yeah, but we do that all the time. Think about around the clear situation where someone has a gun to someone's head, they pull the trigger and the gun jams, right? I mean, I don't think you'll find any place in America.
Think about this. Think about robbery while armed. And it's a robbery while armed. We have decided whether I'm just doing that.
Yeah.
Because things happen when you do that.
No.
That we think we need to guard against, or you are more blameworthy for doing that.
And so I think you're absolutely right that there's blameworthiness that has to be addressed, and I think that the question is not whether or not the person is entirely innocent. It's just the gradation, whether or not there is this additional blameworthiness that attaches when there is a victim who is harmed.
So
that's right,
for the same reason, assault with intent to kill is not graded the same as murder. Yep.
So we're almost at the end of our time.
Is there a third possibility? Is it that just like an attempt is a catcher, is a penalty, that a sting is a separate penalty?
Somewhere in between what an attempt would and a completed attempt.
It's a completed attempt.
Yeah, it's a completed attempt.
Yeah, you know, this is certainly we could... yes, and completed attempts more generally as a category, not just stings, but other forms of completed attempts. Everything was the same except when I pulled the trigger, it misfired, right? Like, you know, like everything was done. How is that treated, right? Like, we could break this apart. Now, we've already added complexity in, you know, filling out what attempt liability is. Grading this differently, I think there was at least one jurisdiction that's done, this is pretty cutting edge to go that way. I'll just, you know, and maybe it's logical, right? I mean, again, I think I will say again, you see this handled in different ways in even reform jurisdictions. So nobody's, I think the intuitions really cross cut in this, and it goes to fundamentals about. Is this about the subjective, like you're saying, the mental state of the defendant, and how we're, or is it also about the objective result? And in some offenses, we have different intuitions that, oh, the result's more important, you know, and, you know, we're, you know. So I'm not sure we're going to, I'm almost sure we will not agree on any across-the-board answer. So what I would suggest is everybody, when again, kind of going forward, if there are particular concerns about particular offense, like, you know, absolutely, you know, an attempt here should be treated the same as the full, or vice versa, maybe we kind of deal with this where there's, like, we think there's, like, outlier cases, but again, isn't really addressed generally in district law, isn't addressed in other jurisdictions generally, very haphazard. So it was great for you to pick up on it. And again, it is ultimately about penalties. We're already changing for property offense penalties.
So are you suggesting we shouldn't be commenting on things like that? I don't.
No, just the opposite. I'm saying particularly where you see for a given offense that you have a strong intuition, we definitely want to hear about that because whatever across the board, if we have a default kind of across the board, like, you know, Dave's pointing out, well, right now the default is it's attempt, right? You know, in all these situations. We want to be very vigilant. Whatever we end up recommending, it's going to come with, you know, and there's going to be disagreement on this. It's going to be a significant point. You know, that point will get me. Those debates will go on. But I think the value we can add now is figuring out, find the default rule. Are there particular offenses also where this actually really is a big deal, right? And, you know, maybe it is, you know, absolutely you preserve it for, you know, fictitious child. Absolutely you preserve it for RSP. You don't for these other two offenses. You know, maybe it's, you know, the fraud type offenses because, you know, so that's, I think, I just kind of put that out there too in general, like where the advisory group as a group is not going to coalesce much, right, around these things. In some sense, the benefit we have for the council is creating a record on it and being able to say, okay, yeah, hear the argument, you know, the different views, but we can agree maybe that, you know, again, fictitious child is something that really needs to be treated the same as the complete. You know, maybe Laura gave that today. I don't know. We'll see when we get there. So that's all I was trying to say. Any last thoughts? Because it is noon and
we have to listen to the meatloaf clip.
That's why I've stayed.
Deceiver, I called you about this, and you left it in. in the report on for definitions for against persons. In the definition of deceive and deception, 8C, you call the person the deceiver. No. We're going to call him a person.
Sorry, I'm sorry. We're
which report?
You're in
8, and it showed up again in 14, meaning you've not learned your
lesson. Where are you, Laura?
8C, report 8, definition 8.
But wait,
for
report
deceive and deception,
page?
Definition, page 16.
Got it.
Failing 16. To correct a false impression as to a material fact, including false blah, 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 which the person previously created, or which the deceiver knows to be influencing. No, which the person knows to be influencing another to whom he or she stands in a fiduciary or confidential relationship.
Right, and I think we have that in our notes. That was not, you didn't.
Yeah, no, she's right.
Yeah.
But it's... Yes.
Okay, yeah, no.
The person.
Oh, no, I don't think that was again about... I apologize if it was, but...
Because there was something, because you did fix something else that I appreciated.
Which the person...
In report number 14.
Having to do with the boycott stuff.
The
right.
Person.
Okay. Yes, so good. Yeah. Well, noted. Okay. Noted. If there's... Yeah, yeah. I think that's...
Let's end on that.
Good.
But that's why I get all crazy, like when we catch things and I don't see anybody like writing or typing.
Yeah. No.
Because I'm afraid they're just going to leave.
That's what he's typing.
Doing that?
Yeah. We Yeah. And, you know,
wow.
And I will say, too, like, you know, like...
I need a lot of animation on it, you know?
Yeah, and I have an animation skill. I do color coding for, like, how animated the comment was.
I started working for this partner just very quickly who... this is a long time ago. But he, if you did not come into his office, even just to say hello and have a notepad back in the day, he thought there was something wrong with you because he might want to tell you something. And
he
it
sounds
was
like
so,
a great guy.
It was so bad, Jerry Oshinsky, that no matter what he said, I just wrote. And he...
That was cemented the friendship. Yeah.
And sometimes there was nothing on my paper. So I need you to perk up and move your little fingers.
I will say, too, like...
That's all good.
So everybody knows, when we've had meetings with some of you and you've come with, like, you know, want to talk through things, you know, like, we've taken notes, right, like, on the hard copy. So we have different systems depending on, you know, how it's working out. But
which one of us is color green?
Yeah, no, exactly. who's got all that paper in there? But yeah, you know, we're not perfect. We tried these to keep all this through the different systems, but
I'm okay now.
Yeah.
You've
so we've got
you
systems.
You may look really calm.
They might be flawed,
so
but we have systems.
Like
we're not a good one. Questions move. About how first and second degree burglary operate points out typo.
Okay.
that's all you have to say? The typo? What about 16705 and all of that stuff?
It's up there.
Okay.
It's up there. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
You're getting me all crazy again. It's perfectly fine.
Let's wrap up the official meeting, and then so that is not on the, you know, whatever copyright violation we have from listening to some meatloaf.
Light things up a little bit.
Let's light them up.
Okay, wait. Are we ready?
No.
Are we wrapped up?
No. Are we wrapped up, or we have to have like a
We are wrapped.